Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here on the 5571 podcast. My name is Danny, and this week I'm also joined by a guest host. Just like the last couple weeks, you guys liked having the guest host on, so this time I got a new guest host for you. His name is Jared, and you might recognize him from an Instagram account and YouTube channel called Discover the Magic. You can follow them right now on Instagram at Discover the Magic, and I'll put links to that in the show notes of this episode, so you can click right to it if you don't know already. I actually helped, start the Discover the Magic with Jared and Alana back in the day. So it's good to have you back, Jared.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Danny. I mean, it's true. I mean, you helped with Discover the Magic, and now it's kind of my baby. So it's kind of fun to come back here and talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. I love having Jared's perspective, and there's a lot to get perspective on when it comes to Design Resort, and with D23 just being right around the corner, I figured why not get a different perspective. We've heard Mondo, let's get Jared and maybe a few other people to talk about some of these upcoming changes as we find out more and more information. But I wanted to jump right in to some relevant news right away. I wanted to start off first talking about Season of the Force. I actually went to Disneyland over the weekend to take part and see all that I could see from Season of the Force, which started this past Friday and goes, I think, till June, I want to say like June 5th or something. It goes like the very beginning of June. So there will be a little bit of overlap when it comes to the Pixar Fest and Season of the Force simultaneously happening at the same time. However, there's already prep underway for Pixar Fest, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But as far as Season of the Force, some of the big takeaways from that were brand new missions and experiences on Star Tours from The Mandalorian, from Ahsoka, and from Andor. I had a chance to experience some of those as well, too. Star Tours still makes me very nauseous, but I did it anyway just to try it out. Jared, do you have any plans to go try those out at all?
Absolutely. Like, Season of the Force, this time go around, seems like they really put a lot more thought into it this time. Because I remember back in, 2019 was the first Season of the Force?
Yeah, I want to say, it started like Star Wars weekends and then Star Wars weeks. Like, I don't know, weekend Star Wars, yeah. Something like that. And then it like slowly evolved into this Season of the Force thing. You're right.
And this is because I remember before it was just kind of the takeover of Tomorrowland with Hyperspace Mountain, some new food and beverage. But this time it seems like they're going a lot more. Galaxy's Edge is part of it, mainly is a part of it. These new missions on Star Tours look great, especially now that the popularity of Andor and The Mandalorian and Ahsoka, it's perfect to bring them into the parks in a like tangible way instead of just like characters walking around. Now they're part of the attractions here, which is great.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really cool. My sentiments exactly to see them on the attractions, see them so that you can experience something that you just watched. Right. It's so cool to see Disney change something in the moment like that. And something they teased that was going to come to the Millennium Falcon. We just never saw that. So it's cool to see that Disney's continuing to do it on an attraction like Star Tours, especially with characters from Ahsoka and Andor that people have a really strong connection to already. Seeing them in the parks, being able to live those experiences, like you said, is really cool to see an attraction. And I agree. Season of the Force felt a lot bigger this year. I had a chance to not only experience Star Tours, I did a mixology course for, which was for Food and Wine Festival, but they kind of simultaneously did it for Season of the Force. And that one was for Oga's Cantina, where we made the drink, the Jedi Mind Trick, which it was a shock to me to see what was in that drink. I never knew that ordering it, because it's kind of not like, I don't know, I guess you just don't think about it when you get it, but it was cool to see what went into it, and now I know how to make it. So that was fun. There was also a bunch of new character experiences inside Galaxy's Edge, like Jared was saying. One of the cool things was having Sabine Wren from Ahsoka over in Galaxy's Edge roaming around, and also the new the new droids running around Galaxy's Edge, the BDX droids. They were a lot of fun, super cute. A lot of guests were big-time fans of these things. Disney Imagineering did a small test run of these. I don't even remember how long ago that was. Do you remember, Jared?
They did. It was earlier this... I think it was late last year, right? Like, for only a couple weeks?
Yeah, it was like a small little test. They had three droids at the time and a bunch of Imagineers out kind of watching and seeing what guests were doing with them. This time around, I only saw two when we were in Galaxy's Edge over the weekend. And they were walking around Galaxy's Edge. And then they made their way over to the garage area of Galaxy's Edge where the Star Speeders are. And kind of behind the fence so that people could gather around there and kind of leave them in a protected space. Still very much... like a test thing, right? And I love the clever kind of wording from Imagineers where they kind of make it sound like, you know, these droids have been made from scrap parts. They're you know, just like little fledgling droids that have just been, you know, gathered from all these different scraps and things, and they, you know, got their little bugs and quirks, right? So they already put into the storyline that they're a little bit buggy because it is a newer technology. So there could be times where they might, you know, run into something or fall over or stuff like that. So it kind of puts it into the storyline when they talk about it in that way. I thought that was a really cool way of doing it. All of these things, though, they start around like 9, 10 a.m., and they continue throughout the day in different sets up until about 3:30 to 4. So I wanted to bring that up for the podcast, just so you guys knew. They actually, and I didn't know this, Jared, unless you knew, but for the first time, I noticed when I was with Peter and Kitra from Ordinary Adventures, and we were looking at just seeing the app to see if there was set times for like Boba Fett, Mandalorian, stuff like that. They actually listed sets for Sabine Wren, Boba Fett, and Mandalorian with different times of when they'd be roaming around Galaxy's Edge. I didn't know they did that for characters at all.
That's great to know, because if you're going there and you want to see a specific character, especially like the Mandalorian, very popular in the land, you want to make sure to get there when he's there. So that's awesome. Because before it was just kind of random. You didn't know when you were going to see him.
Exactly. So that was a really cool change. I don't know if that's just for Season of the Force because there were so many characters, but like I mentioned, we were there. We had Boba Fett out. We had Mandalorian out, Sabine Wren. We had these droids out. It just felt like Galaxy's Edge was alive. And I was like, man, this is really what Galaxy's Edge just needed for so long, to have all these characters there.
That's what I was going to say. It seems like finally we're slowly building up to what was promised with Galaxy's Edge. And it's just slowly getting to that point.
Yes, so. It is. It is, yeah. And characters weren't the only thing added for Season of the Force, like Jared was saying. There is special food as well, too. New items at Docking Bay 7, at Ronto Roasters, Cat Sacka's Kettle, Galactic Grill in Tomorrowland, so the churro carts and popcorn carts in Tomorrowland. So there's a lot of new stuff added. And then don't forget, too, as well, the Grand Californian Hotel. The Craftsman's Grill and the lobby little snack bar area, they're getting in on the fun as well with a lobby display just now for Star Wars Season of the Force. I'm curious to see...
gorgeous looking.
It is. I'm curious to see, though, Jared, since Season of the Force goes through Pixar Fest, and Grand Californian has been getting so into these different things, and Pixar Fest is going for so much longer, do you think we see this thing get taken down before Pixar Fest starts, or do we see this continuing to stay and then the Grand Californian adding something afterward for Pixar Fest?
I think it's the latter. I think this is gonna stay through Season of the Force, and then they'll tear it down and then build something new for Pixar Fest in the lobby. It just might be a week or two after Pixar Fest starts.
Yeah,
something new to come check out.
Yeah, something that's what I was thinking too. But definitely, if you're headed to the resort, go check it out. Season of the Force is, like Jared was saying, pretty much strictly at Disneyland Park for the most part, except for the hotel stuff. So if you're going to Disney California Adventure, fear not, you'll still have Pixar Fest coming up and Food and Wine Festival at least until April 22nd. But leaving Star Wars Season of the Force now and heading over to talk a little bit more about D23. We talked about it in past episodes as far as tickets being sold out, all that kind of stuff. Well, there was rumors that there were a lot of bots that purchased tickets, or people who purchased tickets with the intent of reselling the tickets. And while this has been something that you could do technically in the past, Disney kind of put out a little bit of a disclaimer on the D23 website, and I wanted to read the little note that they put up just to kind of ward off anyone who might be thinking about purchasing from a third-party reseller if they didn't get tickets during the normal distribution time. So it says, note, tickets purchased from any other source that's sources may not be valid. D23 is not able to honor, replace, or refund invalid tickets. D23 will provide an official opportunity to transfer tickets to other guests prior to the event. However, the recipient email must be associated with a valid D23 member account to claim the transferred ticket. And it says, once the ticket transfer process opens, D23 will be the only ticket service that is able to authenticate that a D23, the Ultimate Disney Fan Event ticket, is valid. I was talking to Jared about this a little bit before we started recording. The whole process seemed very ticket mastery. Yes. The queue, yes, the way you selected tickets, and then, of course, the famed service fee after we bought our tickets. So Ticketmaster also has a way of officially like reselling and transferring tickets within their own system. So I didn't necessarily outwardly say that we were purchasing from a Ticketmaster system, but we have to remember that Honda Center was and is a Ticketmaster Live Nation venue. So we knew Ticketmaster had to be involved in some way. The system, if you had ever purchased a concert ticket recently, felt exactly like it. So I feel like Ticketmaster was like the back end system of it all. And then Disney kind of had their people do the front end system, so it was still going through D23's website, but it did feel like it was Ticketmaster. So it makes sense that they're doing ticket transferring this way, because it's how they do it officially as well too. But what do you think, Jared? Did you get a sense online when you kind of were searching the Twitter sphere and all that stuff that there was a lot of bots and people buying just to resell? Is that kind of the vibe you got?
Because, you know, the thing that surprised me with this whole process, the whole process of buying it was insane. Like, seats were disappearing as you were clicking on them, like they would when you go buy, like Taylor Swift tickets or something like that. Like, they were disappearing immediately. You would click it, and you would get, like, a little exclamation mark, and it would go away. It was exactly like a Ticketmaster site. But the whole thing with the bots buying it, I think that's why it sold out so quickly this time. Because in previous years, this did not sell out. It took, like, when I looked up on Twitter, it took over 100 days for the last expo to sell out completely. So,
yeah.
And for this to sell out in 3 days, I can see where I think bots did play a big role in scooping up all of those tickets just to resell them.
Yeah, I agree. It seemed that way anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There was such a high demand this time around, and when you're bringing in a Ticketmaster venue, like Honda Center, it definitely brings attention to the event that normally wouldn't have. Right, in the past, D23. There wasn't really a big incentive to resell. Like Jared was saying, it didn't sell out really fast right away last time. And this time around, with assigned seating in different sections in a Ticketmaster venue, you have people whose whole business it is to resell tickets based around events that happen at Ticketmaster venues. They're now in the game, right? They're seeing this event that they've never heard of come to this venue, and they're interested in buying tickets to see what it's like. Maybe they saw that the first day of tickets went on sale, like it went really fast. So they're like, oh gosh, we should probably buy some of these to resell them later. So I agree. It seemed like there was a lot of maybe, people buying tickets who wouldn't normally, especially since how fast it sold out.
Well, I was texting you the day we bought tickets. That night, they were already on the resale market for some of these tickets.
Yeah, so I saw that too.
And they are going for 4 to 8 times their actual face value. So and this was not like it was last. I mean, I get it now. This time you have the Honda Center with assigned seating, so there wasn't really that need to have resale tickets for the last expo. But it's it's a totally different ball game that we're playing in now.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like specifically, you know, this time around when we see the transfer process, it's going to be a little bit different. I just think a lot of things are going to be a little bit of a learning experience. So I'm definitely going to keep an ear, an eye on everything that I see coming out for D23. I have a pretty good history of like showcasing that and building up to the event once we get to it. So I'm going to do my best to do that as well this time around, because it's going to be a lot of information to sort through. So as we find out more, we'll definitely share it here and talk about it, because I think we're all really excited around this D23 more than anything.
Oh yeah. This one seems different this time.
Yes, exactly. The next topic I wanted to hit really quickly was around Disneyland Pride Night, Disneyland After Dark Pride Night. So today, the day that we're recording this podcast, Disneyland After Dark Pride Night tickets went on sale for Magic Key Holder. So some of you may who are listening to this may have already got tickets for that. If not,
I did.
you might have gotten tickets for it already. If you're not a Magic Key Holder, though, tickets go on sale April 11th, and that's no earlier than 9 a.m. So around 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, you can get your tickets for Disneyland After Dark Pride Night on the days that they have available for the event. Specifically, when you logged in to purchase tickets, Jared, is it just two nights again?
Yep, just two nights.
Okay. And are any of them a weekend day, or is it just weekend?
No, they're middle of the week. It is on the – let me go check – 18th and the 20th.
Got it. 18th and the 20th. And specifically, I wanted to mention Disneyland released a guide to Pride Night, which talked about when tickets go on sale, but also kind of what to expect. So it looks pretty similar, if not exactly the same as last year. But last year was a success, right? Everyone really loved the event and thought that all the offerings were great. So if they brought everything back the same way, I think people would be happy, but they'll probably throw in a few surprises like they always do every single year. But they're going to have some of the things come back, like the special fireworks show during the event, the Welcome Pride Cavalcade, which had all the characters in it, and some other cast members involved who got really into some of the dance moves. And then, of course, all the characters in their special costumes for Pride Night. They have a dance club along the Rivers of America, line dancing inside the Golden Horseshoe, the Ohana Means Family dance party in Tomorrowland, and then of course tons of food and snacks all throughout, just like all the other Disneyland After Dark events. This ticket, just like all the other events, includes a 3-hour mix-in period from 6 to 9 p.m., and then the event begins at 9 p.m., I think until 12 a.m., so there's a mix-in period, and then the Pride Night has its own like period, I think till 1 a.m. I think probably. So and I think the fireworks are towards the beginning of the night, so just plan accordingly. Yeah. With that one,
it and says this year that the fireworks actually kick off the event at 9 o'clock, so
yeah, because they can't do it too late, so especially since it's a weeknight. So definitely stay tuned for when we get more details about like specific times for different things. And if you can, just like I've said at every other Disneyland After Dark event, the same was true for Disney Channel Night. The best thing to do is get there during the mix-in period. And if you can, check in inside the park. But if you can't, don't worry. Do it. Just be prepared to queue up for a little bit outside Disneyland with the rest of the people getting in through the main entrance. Did you go last year, Jared, to the Pride Night?
I did not go last year.
Okay.
And I'm very excited to go this year. I'm going to both nights because I missed it last year, so I'm going to both nights. I'm really shocked this year with how successful it was last year. They didn't expand it to more nights this year.
Yeah, I thought that we would see like four, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe they. I'm trying to think what. This since it's in June.
Is it during grad night time? Is that why maybe they're only doing...
I was just thinking in my head, like, maybe this is still, like, within the grad period. Because, like, if they're strategically picking, like, the middle of the week, sometimes we see grad nights even on Saturdays.
And mostly grad nights over at California Adventure now, too, correct?
Yeah, it is, but they have a pretty large mix-in period that starts at both parks. Yeah. that's my only thought. Maybe that could be the reason why. But if it continues to sell out and be a success, maybe we see more events in the future, right? Like just like when I went to Disney Channel Night, I know that they didn't sell out until just before the event. Mm-hmm. But once everyone experienced it, it was a wild success for everyone that went to it. So I hope they bring that one back as well, too, with more additional nights.
And it also shows that they probably should keep updating these events, too, because I know they expanded how many Star Wars nights there were this year. And I think you can still buy tickets to them currently.
Yes. Yeah, it's not... I think people aren't as excited to go to the Star Wars nights, and officially in the Star Wars night guide, they didn't list anything about a fireworks show, and specifically called it out. Yeah. So Pride Night's calling it out in their guide with fireworks, but Star Wars night didn't, and I feel like that event just doesn't live up to the hype if there's no Star Wars fireworks.
And you know, I did it in 2021, and if it's the same exact event from 2021 for Star Wars night, I have nothing bringing me back to that event.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I did it twice in a row, two different years. Nothing really changed from that other than maybe the addition of Ahsoka one year. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel the need to go back. So, nope. However, like in the instance of like Disney Channel Night, I didn't get to experience like half the stuff I wanted to, but I still saw a lot. And so I hope they bring it back because I can experience more the next time around. But we'll have to see.
Yeah.
But moving on to the next topic, I wanted to discuss another kind of blog post as well as a little YouTube series called We Call It Imagineering. And this kind of like threw me by surprise. I don't know about you, Jared, but yeah. I was not expecting Disney to release a YouTube series in any way.
They just kind of dropped a teaser trailer for some Imagineering series out of nowhere. Right after, I think they dropped it the day of the investor call. And
yes.
It's like, oh, we're going to have a new series on YouTube. And I did not expect them to go as hard with this video as they did.
Right. It almost felt like, hey, this should be a new season of mm-hmm. the Imagineering story on the mm-hmm. Disney Plus streaming service. But like Jared was saying, the episodes weren't long enough, so maybe... who knows, maybe it was originally designed for that and then they didn't have enough content. So they're like, hey, let's put it on YouTube and we'll do a new thing on it. But this particular first episode went over some of the very innovative, lifelike audio animatronics that we're getting for Tiana's Bayou Adventure. And it did a little bit of history, right, mm-hmm. of some of the other animatronics that we had throughout the years, starting like with the first ever one that kind of Walt had, and then moving forward to like the Tiki Room and all that stuff. But we got a first ever look at some of the animatronics coming inside the Tiana's Bayou Adventure attraction, including Tiana herself, Mama Odie. We saw very, very briefly her mom, Eudora, and also, I think it's Charlotte, her friend, mm-hmm. her best Charlotte. Friend, Charlotte. And then we also saw Lewis, the alligator. Mm-hmm. And forgive me, but I don't know the little kid who's on the drum set. I don't know
his... That is Naveen's brother, Ralphie.
Naveen's brother. Okay, so Naveen's brother, we saw his audio animatronic as well, too. And some other, like, critter things and stuff like that. But I was extremely impressed with these audio animatronics and how mm-hmm. fluid their movements were. And in the case of Mama Odie, the skin looked so real, like, on yeah. it. It just was like... I was like, is this just straight up the animation moving? Like, it's so, it looks so realistic. But when you're watching the show, I don't know if you picked up on this too. Like, they showed a moment with Lewis the alligator mm-hmm. from the attraction without his exoskeleton on. So just like kind of the inner workings of the audio animatronic and like what holds that kind of fur layer on the outside. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that material looked very similar to that big Hulk costume that they were showing off at D23 Expo
last year. So it is very similar to that because it's 3D printed exoskeleton of the animatronic. So they make it very lightweight.
Yeah, it looked very similar to that. So I was like, oh, maybe mm-hmm. they learned from this technology to put it towards mm-hmm. the audio animatronics. But we saw a first look at how these attraction animatronics were going to be. In all honesty, I had zero expectations for what anything would be like as far in the attraction. You know, coming from Splash Mountain, the audio animatronics were anything but like advanced, right? They were very basic animatronics. The fact that they were using critters that played instruments made me think they were just going to reskin some of the existing animatronics and call it a day.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, well, that's kind of what Splash Mountain was. Maybe they're just going to do the same thing. But they really went all out on this. And they're really doing like this movie justice as far as bringing it to life, and really there might have been a like worry about some budget cutting, right? Especially since we saw versions of the attraction change in the concept art. But then when you see these audio animatronics, you're like, oh, maybe this is where all the budget went.
And I'm okay if that's where the budget went, because these are exactly phenomenal.
Exactly. So I had a chance to go over to Tiana's Bayou Adventure myself this weekend just to check on it. It is insane how much they've drastically added to the attraction on the exterior in just the span of a week. They really took advantage of the dry weather that we had this week in between rain. I know it's going to rain again this weekend. And they've already got the cypress trees in there. They have all the greenery on the outside of the mountain. I think any day now we start seeing some of the scaffolding come down, which is crazy to even think. But I thought it seemed anyway that we were so far behind Disney World as far as the attraction itself, but it seems like they kicked it into high gear and really started moving fast. Do you get the same vibe?
Absolutely. I think there is a sense of urgency with this attraction too. For Disneyland especially, because Disney World looks like it can open any day now. Like, they are pretty close to the finished product over there. And I don't think Disneyland wants to wait too long to have their opportunity to have this attraction in their park, and the Magic Kingdom the only one that has it. So,
I think Disney doesn't want it to be too big of a gap between the two. I mean, originally, I know they said that they wanted to open them simultaneously, but we knew that just didn't work out.
No.
So, but yeah, they don't want too big of a gap because, right, everyone's going to talk about this attraction and then they're going to forget about it, right?
Yeah, and there's going to be videos online about it. There's going to be all sorts of stuff. And Disneyland wants their moment, too, to show off their brand new attraction.
Exactly. And I think the only saving grace in this aspect of it all is that Disneyland and Walt Disney World have very different, pretty different rides as far as the ride system. The Walt Disney World attraction is a little bit larger and longer. So
it moves slower. Ours moves a lot quicker.
Ours moves quicker, is a faster attraction. So you have a lot, you have to look at a lot more while you're moving quickly. And we also have like some drops and things that don't exist at Walt Disney World, but they have like whole showrooms we don't have and like a bigger end scene. So, my favorite part about Walt Disney World is that you don't get soaked.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they adjust that on ours a little bit.
That's what I've always been fearful about this attraction at Disneyland. Cause I'm like, I would avoid Splash at Disneyland cause I didn't want to get soaked from head to toe. And I want to go on this attraction probably many times, but I don't want to get soaked.
Exactly. So I'm hoping they retool the bottom of the drop a little bit, maybe the level of the water or something, so that we just don't get like totally soaked. So we'll have to see how that ends up turning out. But if you guys haven't already, I'll put a link in the show notes to the We Call It Imagineering episode, so you can watch it for yourself if you haven't already. Check it out, see these audio animatronics in the video yourself. They're amazing, incredible. They even talk about some of the things like I would never have thought of, like how if they are adjusting a small movement, they might then have to go to the person who makes the costume for the audio animatronic and be like, hey, you gotta make a whole new costume for this, because the way the costume fits on the character, it might not allow that movement that they're trying to make. And I never thought of that. I never thought that like the clothes would do
that. A video of someone from a publication that was invited to Imagineering before this video went out. And they were saying that they talked to the costume designers of the animatronics themselves, and every single Tiana has a different costume. And we were like, well, what does that mean? They're all wearing the same thing. But they said, no, they're all different shirts. Some have longer sleeves because of the motion that she makes while she's moving. It's kind of fascinating how that works.
Yeah, I agree. It was very fascinating and something I never knew. So there's probably something for you to all learn too from watching it. So I'll put a link in the show notes so you guys can check it out. But for the main juice now of this episode, I wanted to talk about some of the topics that we've covered already. Things like the Avatar experience coming to Disney, Disneyland Resort specifically, get Jared's point of view and things like that. We've found a little bit more details out. We had a chance to, you know, inspect the concept art a little more. And also we're getting a little closer now to when Disney is actually going to receive an answer from the city of Anaheim on mm-hmm. their thoughts of if whether or not this is getting approved or not. And so, you know, we talked about it on the last episode, Jared, but at least for the Avatar experience, all the rumors that we were hearing was that this experience or this land would be built on the current transportation plaza just outside the Esplanade in between Disneyland and Disney California Adventure Park. Is that kind of what you heard, or are you hearing a totally different location in the rumor sphere?
I am hearing the exact thing you guys are hearing. I mean, it makes the most sense for where it should be, because it's the easiest to build off of a theme park expansion. Like, if they want to get the ground running right away on this, because anything on the Disneyland, like, expand or California Adventure or Disneyland expansion area on the parking lots near the hotels, that is going to take a lot of work. A lot of infrastructure work has to happen before any kind of an expansion can happen over there. A lot of things have to change on that side of the resort. To get Avatar done, not many things have to change in that section. To start closing attractions within California Adventure, to start building off of that, they can, as soon as they get the yes or no, they can hit the ground running.
Exactly. And we saw maybe some of the first things, first signs, right, of this already happening. We saw Disney moving their Avengers merchandise location from outside the land inside the Avengers headquarters building inside Avengers campus. They opened that called Avengers Vault. We all know that that wasn't really supposed to be just a gift shop. It was supposed to be an entrance to a main attraction with a gift shop, I'm sure, incorporated somewhere. But that wasn't the main purpose of that, right? But they did make a makeshift space in there to currently house all the collectibles and things they wanted to sell inside Galaxy's Edge. And then they closed over at Stage 17, the Avengers Superstore. And this store had inside of it a lot of things they don't sell in Galaxy's Edge, but from what I saw over the weekend visiting the park, a lot of those things that aren't being sold in Galaxy's Edge are being sold in a new section inside Buena Vista Street. So that's kind of, I think all those things are absorbing that space, but now Stage 17 is closed, and this is a potential space that would need to be removed to move forward with something like this. In addition to that, we would see something like potentially Monsters, Inc. closing to make room for this as well, too. It's weird because Monsters, Inc. just got a facade renovation maybe a few years ago. So I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, it seems like it might have been wasted resources. But they didn't necessarily know they were going to move forward with this, is my guess.
Yeah, I think they always had that earmarked for theme park expansion space, but I don't think they ever anticipated it being as grand as it might end up being, as it's rumored to be over there. I don't think they ever anticipated it being a massive new land.
Right. I think plans had changed as well, too.
Yep.
It was clear if you look at any plans in the past of the Eastern Gateway project, all you have to do is type in Disneyland Eastern Gateway. concept art. You'll see an announcement, even on Disney Parks blog, still live to this day. They haven't taken it down. It says, new parking structure opening in 2018. Like, it's still there on this day from an article posted by Aaron Glover, who used to be in communications. It's still there on the website. You can see concept art of a parking structure behind the Harbor Hotels, as well as another map showcasing the space in between both parks as being like an expansion space, and it's blank and it's no longer a bus loop anymore. And they relocated the bus loop for Toy Story on the left. So if you guys can imagine while you're listening to this podcast, when you ride the Toy Story buses and you first pull in off of Disney Way into the gatehouse where you turn right to head towards where they drop you off. Well, if you turn left, there's really now just a huge, long, dead space there that's behind Cars Land. This used to be the entrance to, I think, the Timon parking lot and a bunch of lanes that you'd pull in there to go to Timon parking lot. This roadway now kind of connects on the back end to a long roadway that goes over to Disneyland Drive and almost connects to the Simba parking lot. Because back in the day, the Timon parking lots and the Simba parking lots were overflow parking for Disneyland Resort. And the trams, fun fact, went all the way out to Simba parking lot and crossed the street right there on Disneyland Drive. And so those routes are still there. They just sit mostly unused. And in fact, when you're on Disneyland Drive and you cross the street, just across the street from the Paradise Pier, or now Pixar Place Hotel, you see that dead street that's just there fenced off with a really large fence. And they've got the same thing on the left-hand side where the Toy Story buses pull in. Well, the concept art from back in 2018 showed this dead space as a new bus loop for the Toy Story buses to drop on and off just off of Harbor Boulevard there. So they would still come in at the same spot, but instead of turning right, would turn left to drop off guests. Now, how guests get from there to the main entrance, I couldn't tell you. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know if there's like a new entrance somewhere that they can shuttle people through. So that's to remain seen. And then on the other side of Harbor Boulevard, kind of in some dead backstage space, they would build a bus loop for the cast members so the cast member buses can pull off and turn right. So the old bus loop area that currently exists now can be completely gone and make way for this expansion. And then the parking structure that would be built behind all the hotels on Harbor would have a new transportation plaza that would be accessible from all the other hotels and buses and Anaheim things that use that space. Jared, in your opinion, do you think they're going to go with like a similar situation? I haven't really heard too much other than that new concept art we saw of the parking structure that's again being revived behind the hotels there. And they did mention, I think, in the planning meeting that the freeway would again funnel into the structure, just like it does at Mickey and Friends. So we know that much. But do we expect another transportation plaza here, or do we just expect Disney to be like, hey, sorry, you guys are just SOL on this one, and we're only making transportation plazas for our own shuttles?
No, you know, I still think the Eastern Gateway project, as it was announced in 2018, is going to be mostly similar and pretty much built how it was when they initially announced it. There are some tweaks that were made. I mean, we all know the drama between the city and Disneyland over the Eastern Gateway project and why it got canceled. And but all of those issues have been addressed with the businesses along Harbor Boulevard. So I do see us getting the same exact the plan that where it's the bridge over Harbor down into it. Down into where we're at the Esplanade right now. And yeah, I honestly think we're going to get almost identical plans that it was back in 2018, just with a little revised thing where they're going to have more bridges over Harbor.
Okay. Yeah. And the only thing I can't picture in my head right now at all. And I don't know if this needs to change in any way, but if you guys can picture, and yourself, Jared, too, mm-hmm. When you're in that transportation plaza, mm-hmm. and the monorail is right next to that, and it's hugging a building there.
Yes.
And that building, for those that don't know, is Casimir Costuming, mm-hmm. as well as like lockers and some other administrative offices for some backstage stuff. But mm-hmm. it's mainly a pretty large cast member costuming building. Do we anticipate this building being relocated or changed in any way, or can it largely remain the same? Because I just can't picture where a pedestrian bridge would connect, especially looking at that old concept artwork, mm-hmm. And the position of the carousel inn that they purchased to build the bridge. I just don't know how it's going to connect to like a shared space like the Esplanade. I can't.
So the way I remember seeing the artwork, it's pretty much going to go across Harbor and then kind of follow this almost same trajectory of where the monorail line is right now. So you're going to kind of hug that building with a pathway that'll mm-hmm. slowly descend down into the Esplanade. So that's kind of how I interpreted that looking at the artwork.
Okay. So seeing the concept artwork then for Avatar, one of these large walled sides on either side of the mm-hmm. land would probably hide that in some yeah. aspect.
I think okay. a lot of this, seeing things in the distance, that's kind of their way of hiding the infrastructure behind this land of where you're going to have that old, or the where the cast member costuming building is, and the pathway leading down from people just getting to Disneyland. I think that's how they're going to hide it, with really elaborately done rock work.
That's, yeah, I mean, it makes the most sense, right? The mm-hmm. monorail's got to fit in there somewhere. I feel like, too, we'll probably see a large period of time once construction for this begins, mm-hmm. where the monorail closes again.
And I think people also need to know, too, I know they want to, from everything I've heard, they want to get Avatar off the ground pretty quickly. But that parking structure has to start first. They have to start on that parking structure and the transportation loop and all of that before they can, they can start closing things and starting inside the DCA a little bit for Avatar, but they got to start on that parking structure before they can even think about moving into that hub.
Yeah, and Peter did Peter from Ordinary Ventures, by the way, he did a little bit of a little bit of an investigation on this space, and he kind of compared it to acreage by acreage as far as the size of other areas in the land, and basically figured out that if you used most of that space there, including all the way up to the front of Stage 17 in Monsters, Inc., mm-hmm. It would be about 7.5 acres, which he said is about half the space of Galaxy's Edge, which is still a really big land to have mm-hmm. one major attraction in. And then all these kind of other fun, interactive experiences, it looks like. Because when you really zoom in on the photo, you can see some, water play areas. I'm guessing we're probably going to see something like a snack stand rather than a restaurant. I would love a restaurant, and I think it would benefit them. But I don't necessarily know that they have the space to fit a full restaurant. I was thinking more something along the lines of, Tron, where they have, a little food stand that has drinks and snacks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And I would die to have Satouli's canteen here, but I don't know if that's in the cards for us. I think they're going to make most of the land be about the attraction.
Yeah, I agree. And it looks that way too. When you see, mm-hmm. when you see the attraction concept artwork, the land itself is really mm-hmm. the attraction, and they've just mm-hmm. incorporated the land kind of around the attraction. So we see, when you zoom in, you see there's many bridges crossing over the waterways, and the attraction itself is going through a peaceful boat ride underneath all those bridges and through the land itself. So kind of giving you a little bit of a tour mm-hmm. on the boat. And then if you look really far in the distance, you can actually see pathways winding in and around those massive waterfalls in the distance, with guests walking behind the water. And then the attraction itself, you see, is going into that space, into that cave right there underneath the waterfall. So that probably indicates where the attraction will go into its show scene element, as well as probably how you get on and off the attraction, because I would imagine it probably doesn't load outside.
Yeah.
So, but that's interesting to see. So now we know, do we know exactly when Disneyland Forward is going to be voted on for its final proposal?
1 week from this recording, April 16th.
Okay. So 1 week, we'll find out whether or not, and I think Jared's correct in the sense that once we find out yes or no, Disney's going to literally start the next day on getting some of this stuff groundbroken, construction started, because they've been waiting. They blue skied this. They want to get going. They want to share more details. And I think it's contingent upon everything happening on that day. Like Jared said, parking infrastructure has to be started immediately. Yeah. The parking structure for Pixar Pals took a long time to build.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think it took like a year and a half for Pixar Pals to be fully done. And so,
and this is huge. This one's huge.
We're looking at the same time period. I think this parking structure is about the same size as Pixar Pals, so we can kind of, and they're also having to build a whole new transportation hub here too. So you got to add that into the equation with crossings over harbor. And so this is going to take a little time.
Yeah. And as far as the rest of Disneyland Forward, since it's pretty clear that for Disneyland Forward, at least in the immediate future, this is probably what we're going to see.
Yeah.
And then it's not truly in some of those spaces they showcased. In your opinion, Jared, just as we have you on here, like in the future, when we start maybe utilizing some of that space outside the hotels, if in your opinion, where do you think they would expand next? Would it be the Disneyland side or the DCA side with Simba parking lot?
So I personally think they should do California Adventure first. DCA needs more capacity. I know Disney, everyone says Disneyland needs more capacity, but Disneyland, as it sits now, is a fully fledged theme park where people can spend a few days at and they'll have plenty to do. California Adventure, it's still, I mean, it still needs, as much as I love that park, it still needs more. It still needs a little bit more to keep you there. So I think that needs to be their main focus when they first start the Disneyland Forward project, and then they can shift their focus over to Disneyland.
I agree. I feel like they're going to be fleshing out some... There's a lot of things to do at Disneyland, and I think, too, the fact that Disney released a statement to the LA Times in regards to electrifying the Tomorrowland Autopia in the next few years is an indication that when it comes to Disneyland, it sounds like at least in the next few years, we can expect an update to Tomorrowland. And finally, right? And so it's not going to require any of that space. So if we're going from DCA, from Avatar, and then we go back to Disneyland for Tomorrowland for something like, say, the 75th, then we would want to go back to Disneyland Park or Disney California Adventure Park for expansion, and that would make sense to use that space over there. I feel like, too, at that point, getting rid of the Simba parking lot as far as parking situation goes, that's probably the easiest one. Because with a new structure open, they could just push all guests that want to go shopping to these structures.
Yeah,
they've got three structures now. They just choose one of those to go to.
Exactly.
And that's where you'll go if you want to go shopping. There won't be a specific, like, downtown Disney-only parking lot.
There will just be the Disneyland Resort parking, and that's where you park to do anything you want to do at the resort.
Right. So... I agree with that, Sue. But as far as the Avatar experience, we didn't talk a little bit about the attraction itself. Some people were saying it was similar technology, rumored to be like the Shanghai Pirates attraction, where the boats For all the people that don't know, you can just imagine like the way that the ride vehicles move in Rise of the Resistance and Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Very large vehicles that move on their own, controlled by a computer. That's the same way the boats move in Pirates of the Caribbean at Shanghai Disneyland. So the boats can move in other directions than just forwards.
Yeah.
They can go backwards, they can turn, they can rotate, move all around. They just do it in a small layer of water. So, you know, giving kind of the feeling of floating, but also being able to move as well, too. But keen eyes might notice, too, in the concept artwork, that the boats are a lot bigger than the ones in Shanghai with more rows. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if we compare the concept artwork that Florida got versus what they actually received, it is pretty close, but it's not like everything exactly the same. So maybe the artist was just using a little creative liberties here to kind of flesh out an idea for a concept art.
Yeah, and the thing that excites me the most about the rumored tech for this new attraction is, like you were saying, Danny, that these vehicles are so incredible of what they built because they are ran underneath the vehicle in the water by magnets, which is incredible how they use this. And they can actually adjust the speed of how fast or slow your boat goes in the water. So you could just be going very slow, just having just a very slow moving ride, and all of a sudden it can launch you really quickly, like out of nowhere. Like, if you've watched the video for the Shanghai Disneyland Pirates, they actually launch you backwards, up a drop, and then down a drop at the end of that ride. So, all because these magnets are able to do some phenomenal things in this boat.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. And if you think about the concept of the movie Way of Water, they're spending a lot of time underwater. You're seeing... you're seeing this, the Tree of Souls underwater, in this space. You're seeing, you know, the characters learning how to, interact and use the sea life, for things that they ride up above water and below water. Mm-hmm. And also the characters themselves just learning how to swim and hold their breath longer and all that kind of stuff. So if they're going to bring you along for that adventure and be like, hey, come with us, like dive down. Like, and for the boats to simulate that, like Jared was saying, with like launching forward, like maybe you're riding along with the whale creatures and all that kind of stuff. It could be an amazing attraction. And in all honesty, if it ends up being this, I've said it before too, I think it'd be the best ride at Disneyland, like without even question.
Hands down. It'll be the most popular attraction at Disneyland for years.
Yeah. It will be, and it will be something worth the investment. It'll, they could have individual Lightning Lane on this forever, and people would absolutely pay for it all the time. It'd be that new Rise of the Resistance where people are planning their trips around experiencing that ride.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll Disney California Adventure
unique thing too. So it's not just gonna. They can market it as like, oh, Disney World has this Pandora. We have an even better Pandora at California Adventure. So
exactly.
I cannot wait for this. I really can't.
Yeah, I agree. It's a unique marketing opportunity, a great way for them to cash in and showcase $1 billion franchise. I think Scott Gustin on Twitter just posted not that long ago, like the top grossing movies ever in the history of cinema. And both Avatar movies are in the top 10. So it makes people might say, oh, why Avatar? Well, that's because, look, that's how much money they've made.
People are invested in this franchise, whether people want to choose to believe it or not. They are.
Exactly. People have a connection to it. And they're not just pandering or creating an attraction to an American audience. They're creating an attraction that would be a tourist destination. Disneyland's trying to be position themselves more and more as a tourist destination, and especially how great of an attraction to do that, something that connects so evenly to many different cultures and people across the world who love Avatar when the world stage comes to Disneyland in 2028 for the Olympics. So
let me get your opinion on this, Danny. So once Avatar opens, whenever this may be, who knows. What are your thoughts about having the park having to change its name?
We didn't talk about this last time, and that's a good opportunity. I actually talked a little bit about this to Peter when we were hanging out this weekend, and he said that he still thinks it could be called Disney California Adventure, especially if you're portaling to this land inside Hollywoodland, because if they're making it seem like, hey, you're walking, he was kind of thinking how the way Disney's Hollywood Studios does Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, in the sense that you're leaving, I forget the name of that, it's like Grand Avenue, I think it's
Grand
called.
Avenue. Yep.
And then you're going kind of through like what looks like a subway and like into Galaxy's Edge, like you're being transported in that moment. So he was saying, like, what if Disney does it like where they have a building as big as Stage 17, and then you just tunnel through this building through a portal. And then you're going essentially like stepping into the movie and into the world. So you have that Cars Land moment where you get the big reveal to the big valley, and you've just stepped in the movie just like you did for Cars Land. So you've stepped into, you turn the corner, you've stepped onto Radiator Springs, you're in that movie. This one, you stepped into Avatar Way of Water, you're in that movie. So he was saying, I could still see them calling it California Adventure Park if they did it that route. So I kind of agree with that one, but in the same way, I can agree with the fact that with the changeover at the Pixar Pier, the changeover from having Cars Land just in and of itself, the Grizzly River Run area and the San Francisco Street, and San Francisco, I guess you could say, with the little remnants of the winery area, are truly the only things like California left in the park. You can make an argument that like Hollywoodland is, but not so much anymore. especially if their rumors are true about the rest of the land receiving some more expansion from Avengers Campus in the future. So I don't know. I could see a name change, but who knows?
Because it'd be a really cool opportunity too, if you think about it, on Disneyland's end. If, you know, when the Olympics come to town, and let's say this is their big, big pull for the Olympics, be like, hey, come experience our brand new refreshed theme park, and they call it a new name. And then people, I mean, that's how marketing people do. They can make it seem like it's a whole new theme park that is at Disneyland now, but it's just a rebranded theme park. So.
Exactly. That is a brilliant idea, actually. You know, they can even spin it like they did in 2012 for a complete re-grand opening, rebranding of Disney California Adventure Park to a new thing altogether.
Well, because you're going to have international audiences coming to the LA area that maybe have never been to Disneyland before, so they don't know what Disney's California Adventure is, but they'll know, oh, there's a new theme park next to Disneyland. Why don't we go visit it?
Yeah, why don't we go do it? Yeah, very true. Very true. But before we head out for this episode, Jared, were there any other last thoughts that you had in regards to Disneyland Forward or this project specifically?
I cannot wait to... We have been building up to this moment for next Tuesday for the last couple years now. It seemed like it was never going to get here, but I can't wait to see what... Because I know, I even think tomorrow they have an open forum meeting, like an open house, where they're just getting like community together to kind of discuss more about Disneyland Forward ahead of the meeting next Tuesday. And I think they are ready to go full foot on the pedal, ready to go to crank this out day one as soon as they get the yes.
I agree. And I'm looking forward to that as well, too. Tuesday, you know, we usually record the podcast Tuesday night, but I might even wait till Wednesday just to see, like Jared was saying, what happens as far as, like, Disney throwing out a last-minute announcement or something.
They're anticipating a lot of people being there and a lot of people speaking because they're opening. So the meeting starts at 5 p.m. Pacific time. They're mm-hmm. opening the doors at 3. So they are anticipating a lot of people to have a lot of interest in this next Tuesday.
Yes, there will be a lot of media outlets there as well, too, because this is a huge project for Disneyland. This is mm-hmm. The potential expansion of Disneyland for the next 30 years. So this is a big news story.
This is a resort-like transformation type of project. Yeah. This is going to take Disneyland into what it is now, into becoming something similar to Walt Disney World eventually.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a big deal, and we'll, mm-hmm. of course, be talking about it on the podcast, and I would love to have you back on, Jared, to speak about it.
I will come whenever you want me to come talk to you.
But anyways, that wraps up this week's episode of the 5571. I want to thank you again, Jared, for joining us on this week's episode and sharing your thoughts. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes to the Discover the Magic Instagram account, which you can click and make sure you follow for Disneyland updates, Disneyland content, and probably a lot more surrounding this Disneyland Forward project and things to come, as well as D23, because I know Jared's going just like I am, and we're excited to see what they talk about. So stay tuned on all of that. And if you want to make sure you're following the podcast, I don't know how you're listening to this first episode. Maybe you clicked a link on Twitter that I posted, or maybe you clicked a link on Instagram. You can make sure you're following the podcast so that in the future you get notified when new episodes come out. So if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can just hit that follow button. If you're on Spotify, you can subscribe or hit the follow button there as well too. And then I haven't seen the interface yet through YouTube Music. I still need to like check that out when they, because they just transitioned everything to YouTube Music. So I'll have to see how that is. But I'm pretty sure YouTube uses the subscribe like kind of name for a lot of things. So it's probably kind of a subscribe button that you're looking for through the YouTube Music app. But that's how you can make sure you get notified about new episodes. I also have an email address that you can send in questions, tips, or voice memos if you want to be featured on the show. It's Danny@JustAskDanny.com. And you can follow me on all social medias at JustAskDanny. So you can search for me on YouTube that way, on Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. So just search JustAskDanny, and I'm sure you'll find my account on any of those socials. But either way, I want to thank everyone again for listening to this episode. And we'll see you next week to hopefully talk about some great news with Disneyland Forward approvals. See you later, guys.
Bye.